Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hey there, welcome to The Dr. Nina Show here on LA Talk Radio. I'm your host, Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, and I'm here to help you make peace with food. That means no more counting calories or carbs, no more thinking about food all the time. It really is possible to lose weight and gain health, all without ever going on another diet. If you'd like to join me today, the number here in the studio is 818-602-4929. I would love to hear what's on your mind, anything to do with food weight or body image issues or anything that's eating at you, because what's going on in our lives that is upsetting or bothering us or difficult, that is what often leads to problematic behavior with food. And today, my topic is body image. So how many times have you gotten up in the morning in a decent mood, and that lasts right up to the moment you step on the scale and see a number you don't like? Immediately, your mood is shot. You feel terrible. The day is ruined, and you feel awful about yourself. So here's the thing. You cannot measure your self-worth on the bathroom scale. A piece of metal and plastic should not have the power to ruin your day. But often it does. So what to do? Well, I'm going to get into some specifics later, but first I want to say, look, it is so important that we challenge the idea that skinny equals beautiful, and beautiful equals success, and beautiful equals happiness. We just have to find other ways to measure ourselves. I mean, clearly nobody told Oprah Winfrey that the only path to success was by being skinny. Oprah is successful because she is engaging and interested and authentic. So the only thing that is stopping you from feeling good about the way you look, no matter what your weight is, or feeling good about yourself, is the belief that there is something wrong with you. So let's challenge that idea. And also consider your own biases and assumptions about whatever being thinner actually means. So many people believe, and I mean truly believe, like trust, have absolute faith that if they lose weight, they will be happier. Not only happier, but they will be a more confident, more social, just all around better version of themselves. Like, losing weight will make you a better person, not just change the number on the scale. And not only that, they imagine other people will be nicer to them. And this is a compelling illusion. I mean, who wouldn't want to feel that way? Boy, what power. You lose weight and everything you don't like about yourself goes away. You're happier and people treat you better. Wouldn't it be amazing if that were true? Wouldn't it be amazing if you could control the way other people treat you by changing your weight? No wonder it is a tough idea to challenge and lose. And that's what we have to lose. We have to lose not necessarily weight. The idea that losing weight will make us more desirable and better. And by the way, we have learned to think poorly of our bodies. We have been taught to see ourselves as flawed because there is a $60 billion diet industry that is counting on as many of us as possible feeling terrible about our weight and going on diets. And just FYI, as a culture, we have not always had the idea that thinner is better. Back in the 30s, I think it was the 30s, maybe the 40s, you can look it up on Google. There were all these ads with, and they showed like a skinny woman. These were drawings, but a skinny woman looking miserable and just depressed and sad, standing next to a voluptuous, more rounded woman, someone who today would be called fat by today's ridiculous standards. And the caption on these ads is, "How do you look in your bathing suit? Skinny? Thousands gain 10 to 25 pounds this quick, easy way. Pretty ironic, don't you think? Now it's the opposite. So clearly we have to change our thinking. Part of changing our body image is thinking about the way and we think of our bodies and the assumptions that we make. So Dr. Thomas Cash is the author of The Body Image Workbook, and he says that the number one assumption people make is this. This is it. Physically attractive people have it all. He says, society's perception with and marketing of physical attractiveness reinforces the assumption that being good looking, whatever that is, pays bigger benefits than it actually does. The undeniable truth is that being good looking is helpful sometimes. However, as the French author Stendhal observed in 1822, beauty is only the promise of happiness. And for many, many, many reasons, attractiveness does not keep most of its promises. So he says to challenge, he has a number of facts that challenge this idea that physically attractive people have it all. And by the way, we also want to challenge, like, what is the ideal of physical attractiveness? That's, it's a moving target. So his fact number one, he says, beauty is as beauty does. And it's true. Actions speak more loudly than looks. Friendliness, intelligence, honesty, a sense of humor, social sensitivity, those are all very highly valued traits, regardless of what you look like. You know, think about people who have impressed you, people who are important in your life. Is their appearance very important, or are those traits what's most appealing about them? And he says, I bet their looks aren't crucial to how you feel about them. He also says, fact two, first impressions don't always last. Our initial reactions to someone's appearance are not frozen forever in our minds. We come to see good people as increasingly good looking. And he says, have you ever met a person whose appearance wasn't so appealing, but as your relationship evolved, that person's looks seemed more and more interesting and attractive? And on the other hand, have you ever noticed how the halo of physical attractiveness can fade over time? Playwright George Bernard Shaw says, beauty is all very well at first sight, but whoever looks at it when it has been in the house 3 days, who looks at beauty when you're living with someone? He said that in 1903. Oh, that is so true. I once dated this guy. He was really hot. Let's call him Mark. Well, because his name was Mark. He looked like JFK Jr. I mean, this guy was a really, really good-looking guy. In fact, when we would walk into a restaurant or into a room, people would look at him before they looked at me. That's how good-looking he was. He was stunningly attractive. But as I got to know him, he also was kind of boring. I'm sorry, Mark. Kind of boring. And as I realized, like, wow, he's really doesn't have anything to say that's interesting or enlightening or challenging, he started to look less and less good looking to me. And well, there it is, proof that George Bernard Shaw was right. He also says, Dr. Cash also says, beauty can backfire by implying egotism. So appearance assumption number one, which is that physically attractive people have it all, ignores the ugly faces of beauty, because the assumed advantages of attractiveness actually cause disadvantages. I had a friend who once got pulled over by the cops, and basically the police said, you pretty girls get away with everything in your life. You're not getting away with this ticket. And so there it is. Like, you know, it works both ways. So I think you get the idea that it is an assumption that if you look a certain way, if your weight is a certain way, if you're a certain level of attractiveness, again, that is also very subjective, that you will have a better life. It breeds attractiveness. Attractiveness can breed envy and jealousy. It can objectify you. People objectify you. They don't see you as you are. They make they have ideas about you. All of that. I won't even go into that because I think you get the idea. If you have any thoughts on this or anything else that's on your mind, please, I'd love to hear from you what your experiences are in this area, what your challenges are. The number here in the studio is 818-602-4929. Okay, so what are some things that we can do to challenge our negative body image? What can we do to turn things around? Well, here are some thoughts on body image by Psychology Today writer Dr. Mary Pritchard. She says, diet is a four-letter word. It sure is, and never trust a four-letter word where the first three letters spell die. Okay, so here are her tips. She says, take the sticky note challenge. Well, I have to tell you, I did not know what the sticky note challenge is, but now that I know what it is, it's pretty cool. So there's this organization called Operation Beautiful. The mission of Operation Beautiful is to post anonymous notes in public places for other people to find. Notes that would brighten their day. Something like, you are beautiful, you are loved, you are lovable. So Dr. Pritchard got this idea to use sticky notes for ourselves. You write several sticky notes that convey a phrase about you, something positive about you. And you put them in places where you're going to see them, like your wallet, your office wall by your computer and your bathroom, just or anywhere. It's for you and for other people. So why do we do this? Not just because it's fun to make other people happy and imagine that you're going to brighten their day. Like, have you ever paid for someone's parking when they're right behind you? And it's just a good feeling. But actually, the more we see certain messages, the more we start to believe them. So these notes have a dual purpose because they help you feel better about yourself. You're doing something nice and you're also exposing yourself to something positive. And they will also help other people feel better about themselves. Her second tip on improving body image is to enact a media ban. Research says that men and women are negatively, yes, men too, are negatively affected by viewing idealized images of people on TV, in magazines, video games, online, on social media. So one way to stop comparing yourself to these images is to stop looking at them. So try doing a media ban for like even a week. Often, people in inpatient programs for eating disorders are not allowed to look at any magazines. They're not allowed to look at anything like any magazines like Glamour or Cosmo or Harper's Bazaar, like the range of women's magazines and men's magazines. And lots of people have told me that when they then get out of the program and they're at the supermarket and they see the magazine, they realize how impacted they had been by these images without even realizing that they were it was getting to them, that they were like unconsciously comparing themselves to people in magazines. People, by the way, who have been seriously photoshopped. Usually, I mean, I know a lot of models who are young, in their 20s, and believe me, they don't look like their own photos. So we need to stop looking at these photos. Give yourself sort of a media diet, and you're going to see that you will feel better. You will feel better about yourself when you're not comparing yourself to unrealistic images. A third suggestion she has is to stop saying negative things about your own body or anyone else's, and just refuse to listen or engage in negative body talk. There is research that on some level, our brains don't know the difference between what we hear, think, or say. So if you're telling your friend, you need to lose 5 pounds. I don't know anyone who would say that to a friend, but maybe there are people out there who would say, oh yeah, you really need to lose 5 pounds. That your brain somehow, your mind hears that as, I need to lose 5 pounds. This is what she says, yeah, sounds reasonable to me. The same goes for things you hear other people say, or you hear on TV, or see on Facebook or Instagram. Your brain takes in that information and thinks the message is directed at you. So bottom line is, whether you believe this research or not, the less you have exposure to unrealistic body images and the less that you engage in this kind of talk about yourself or anyone else. And by the way, that goes for saying positive things about people. Oh my gosh, you look so good, you lost 5 pounds. Because it puts so much focus on our appearance, and we need to defocus ourselves. Is that a word, defocus? It is now. I think if you say a word with authority, it becomes a word. So it puts the focus on the wrong thing, which is what we look like and what we weigh. And we have so many more things that we want to think about when we think about our friends or our value. Again, if you'd like to talk about body image or anything else that's on your mind, the number here in the studio is 818-602-4929. So let's face it, we can all use a little body image boost from time to time, as we live in a world of magazine covers telling us that our abs should be flat and our we should have like some kind of Kardashian tush, and all of these ideas that there's no way we can accept ourselves the way we are when we have these images, which, by the way, half the time are created in Photoshop. How do we learn to accept ourselves as we are without flat abs and a six pack or an eight pack or a booty that's, you know, Kardashian level? So here are some ways that you can improve your body image, some ways that you can learn to, I guess, love and appreciate yourself and your body starting right now. And the first one, which sort of repeats what I already said, is to stop comparing yourself to other people. I have a call, so I will hold that thought. Hi, caller. You're on with Dr. Nina.
Hi, Dr. Nina. It's Brian from Chicago. How are you?
Hi, Brian from Chicago. Good to hear from you.
Always, always good to listen to your show. And as always, this is a cool and really sort of timely, pertinent topic. So let me just jump right in. I guess my question really is with regard to, you know, negative body image and the way that we think about ourselves. My question is how to counter that. Like, what specific suggestions do you have? Things that you can say to yourself, or, you know, just give yourself something else to turn to besides a negative body image thought. But specifically, how do you do that while trying to navigate through social media? And particularly, you know, Instagram and, you know, any social media platform that really deals with visual images, because, you know, it's sort of like on Instagram, they say that, you know, everything that you ever see on Instagram is the best moment of everyone's day, but it's not real life. But everybody kind of presents, you know, I'm in this perfect vacation place and here's my perfect dog that didn't just eat my shoe, and you know, here are my kids who are well behaved. And, you know, so you have like these almost like images that give you a false sense of how everyone's life is, and can kind of have a negative effect on you in terms of, wow, my life doesn't look as glamorous or as picture perfect as that. I think people do the same thing with like images of themselves, you know, not that they necessarily Photoshop it, but they, you know, you see these images that kind of promote extreme fitness and youth and, you know, affluent lifestyles. So with all of that kind of surrounding you, how do you counter having, you know, either an occasional or frequent negative thought or image about how you look and how you feel?
That's a great question. I mean, just a moment ago, I was talking about going on a social media diet and kind of cutting out social media for like a week, just to give yourself, just to recognize how much you are, how insidious it is that you compare yourself to others. But it is not realistic to never go on social media. That's just not a realistic thing.
Yeah.
So I think that
not anymore.
No, not anymore. Not if you want to be a participating part of society.
Yeah.
One thing that you can do is, it sort of alluding to what you said, is to remember not to compare your real life to other people's highlight reel, because it is a highlight. And I know that some people can take, 100 selfies to get that one perfect selfie that they post and make it look like they just happen to capture this just like that. Just to keep reality in mind that these are highlight reels. This is not real life. That there's more to the story. And the other is to unfollow people who make you feel bad about yourselves. Like if you follow some, fitness guy who's got like ridiculous abs and whatever mm-hmm. it is that is the ideal in male body image right now, and looking at that, unless you're probably on steroids and you are in the gym 10 hours a day or something, not that you have to be on steroids to be super fit, but unless you're spending a lot of time in the gym and don't have much else going on in your life, you're just not going to be able to look like that. So unfollow a person who makes you feel bad about yourself, because that way you're not going to be exposed to that, and which then insidiously gets into your head and attacks your self-image. So that is mm-hmm. that is one thing that you could do. And follow people. The corollary is follow people who do inspire you.
Right. And so that kind of becomes sort of an interesting line to draw, right? Because on the one hand, you want to be inspired and maybe even challenged by people that you might look up to, if it's fitness or a lifestyle guru or, whatever the thing is that you're looking to make improvements in. You want to be inspired by people who at least either actually or apparently have kind of gotten to or close to where you are trying to get to. But at the same time, I think that part of striving for something oftentimes means that you are not there yet, and you can get discouraged and you can get down on yourself. But, so where's that line to draw between I'm trying to kind of keep myself focused and inspired on my goals, and I recognize that from time to time that's going to mean that I'm feeling like I'm not doing enough or I'm feeling like I'm failing, versus I feel bad for a moment that I saw somebody who looks like what I would like to look like, so I'm just going to immediately unfollow them. Like, is there, how do you know when you're kind of getting from a sort of a healthy I'm trying to challenge myself place into a more unhealthy I'm kind of deteriorating myself and it's not good for me? You're an expert, so you would probably know where that line is, but for a lay person like me, how do you know if you've kind of gone too far in one direction and this is no longer inspirational, it's more unhealthy?
Well, if first of all, you can be inspired without being inspired by someone's appearance. Be inspired mm-hmm. by what they say to you. When people have trainers at the gym, trainers they really like, those trainers are not, walking around, just saying, hey, look at me, and that's enough to inspire you. Those trainers are saying, mm-hmm. you can do it. You've got this. The mm-hmm. trainers inspire them by what they say. So I think that if you want to be inspired by someone, be inspired by their words, not their appearance. And if you look, it's who was it? Theodore Roosevelt who said, comparison is the thief of joy. If you follow people who make you compare yourself to them and then not feel so good about yourself, that is not inspirational. That is detrimental. So I think it's important to think about what is inspiring. Is it someone who looks a certain way or someone who says something that gets you fired up and helps you believe in yourself? Helps you believe in your capacity to do something, to change something. That is inspirational.
No, that's a good point. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you for Thank you for calling with, as always, such a good question.
Thank you for inspiring the good questions. Keep up the good work of the topical and you know, really sort of interesting, complicated issues that you deal with.
I shall. I plan on being here every Wednesday until they close the studio down. So
cool. I'll be listening. Thanks so much, Dr. Nina.
Thanks, Brian. Bye bye.
Bye.
Well, that was interesting because I was just talking about not comparing yourself to others. When you wish you look like somebody else, it takes away from who you are. So what you need to do, I guess this is also an answer to Brian's question, is to focus on the qualities you like about yourself, which will make you feel better and minimize the things you don't like. You know, if you don't like your stomach, then don't focus on your stomach. Focus on your arms or your legs or your face or your eyes or whatever it is you do like about yourself. Focus on that. And the more that you like those qualities, the less the things you don't like about yourself will just make you zero in on and feel bad about that. The other thing you can do is focus on what you have the power to change. Lots of people say things like, oh, I wish I were taller. I wish I were shorter. Things they cannot change. So things they need to do is redirect their focus on something they can change. So think about what you can change. You can't be younger. You can't be taller. You can't be shorter. But you can tone up with a Pilates class. You can do something with the abilities that you have. And I have another caller. Hi, caller. You're on with Dr. Nina.
Yes, hi, Dr. Nina. This is Larry with Six Pack Abs. How are you?
Hi, Larry from Burbank. I'm well.
I just heard the previous caller, and good question and good answer. As you were talking, I don't know if I can give a shout out to personal trainers. I just wrote a story about, but I thought of them. When he was talking and you were talking, these are two big buff guys who have been lifting for years, and they're all about judgment free. Come in how you are. If you regress, great, we'll work with you. If you progress, great. They look at your movement, and it's nothing about appearance. So it's really, to me, it's kind of groundbreaking. It's in Laguna Beach, which is the zone of, you know, shallow six-pack abs. But I hadn't thought of them.
Well, who are they? Give a shout-out. Who are they? What are their names?
Okay. Well, you know, I don't get any kickback, but they're nice guys. If you look at them, you'll say, oh, it's no pain, no gain. But it's not that at all. It's called Prevail Strength and Conditioning in Newport Beach. And I can give the URL if you want, just for the heck of it. But like I say, if that's not kosher.
I'm sure anyone out there who's in the area, if you Google Prevail Strength and Conditioning, you'll find them. But so it's nice to hear that there are people out there, and I know there are a lot of them. My friend Craig Ramsey is one of them who really believe in helping you access your belief in yourself and to do what you can do and to find your inner athlete. And just to meet yourself where you are rather than try to be something you're not or may not ever be.
Yeah, these guys say that the client they're working with is the most important person in the world when they're working with them. And they say, start where you want to start and go where you want to go. But if it's just to feel better and you don't change your body, but you just feel better, that's fine. If you want to do this or that or you know, add 5 pounds of muscle or lose 5 ounces of fat or go nowhere, but just feel better about yourself. The difference in their philosophy versus how they look if you saw them is pretty significant. So anyway,
and I just want to make a comment on what you just said. Just going off of that, how you feel about yourself. Most of the time, people will say things like, wow, when I started working out, I could barely walk a mile on the treadmill at level 2. And now I can walk, 5 miles on level 5, and that feels great. That is progress that feels as good as changing a number on the scale. That it's not just all about what you see in the mirror. It's about proving to yourself that you can make these changes, and that's a great feeling.
Yeah, I mean, and they use a food plan that offers steps as you progress, and it includes steps as you regress, which is, say, is fine. Just, go with what works, and we'll work with you, and you're, it's like the client coming in for therapy. We'll work with you from where you want to start. It's actually exactly like that. So anyway, when I heard this other guy call in your answer, I want to be able to tell him that I did that. So,
aww.
Yeah, Google prevail, and whatever, you're good to go.
Awesome! Thank you for letting us know about them.
Yeah, I did have a question about that feeling state, independent of how you look. Right now, I would say, if I look like Humpty Dumpty instead of Mr. Clean, I'd rather be a happy Humpty Dumpty than a miserable, person who goes to the gym, 8 days a week. I did hear from actually a therapist whose opinion that I respect a great deal. This was about a week or so ago, that, and it sounds extreme, but that I have been, my folks did what's called soul murder on me, soul murder. They attempted it, and they failed, and it seemed to resonate. I actually came up with that little phrase, the two-word thing, before I heard it. I've heard it before, and I'm wondering what you think about that and how you feel about soul murder, deliberate versus otherwise.
Well, soul murder is a concept that a psychoanalyst and NYU professor named Leonard Schengold actually wrote a book called Soul Murder, The Effects of Childhood Abuse and Deprivation, and in, I think it was 1989, and then he just a few years ago wrote another book called Soul Murder Revisited. So I'm very familiar with that term, but which actually Ibsen is the person who came up with it, the playwright. Ibsen said, it is the destruction of the love of life in another human being.
But what
it's generally thought of to mean is that to abuse or neglect a child, to deprive that child of his or her identity, and to deprive them of the ability to experience joy in life and feel good about themselves, that is to commit soul murder.
Well, it's a mission partly accomplished with a big footnote, and that is, I think, more capable than most of experiencing joy spontaneously by making people laugh, cracking jokes, coming up to strangers and saying, I like that T-shirt. I do that stuff all the time, and I need to learn how to bank that. But in general, the dark, I want to say dark cloud, but that dark, what's that story Stephen King wrote about the giant dome contains anxiety and hopelessness and all that, that I know didn't come from my temperament, but it came from folks who from empty children in adult bodies. And I'm wondering what you think about, I don't think for a second that it was deliberate, but I was the fall guy.
No, and a lot of the times, I mean, I say all the time, I don't like to blame parents. I don't like to say, oh, this happened in your childhood and it's their fault and they did this to you and that to you and that's why you're struggling today. That does nobody any good. But it is important to say, this is what happened to you. And sometimes what happened was catastrophic. And there are two kinds of catastrophic trauma. One is the giant one horrible thing that happens to you that's like a stab wound to your heart. And the other is over time, over and over and over and over, smaller traumas. So, and that's like 1,000 small cuts. So 1,000 small cuts is just as traumatic and painful as one traumatic incident.
I'm reluctant to say, well, my parents did this for the last 40 years, because it gets old for people. And I agree. Understanding and accountability versus blame, it's hard to move from one to the other, believe me.
So often people will come in and say, I've talked about the past forever. I've been to 47 different therapists. I've talked about the past. The past is, I'm done with the past. Why don't I feel better? And my answer to that is, yes, you have talked about the past, but you are not talking about and recognizing how that past is alive and haunting your present. So if you had, for example, indifferent parents who couldn't bring you to life, how have you identified with that, and how are you indifferent to yourself, for example?
Go ahead.
If you had parents that you could never do anything right, how have you recreated that unbeknownst to yourself? You know, do you have a boss that you could never do anything right for? Do you have a spouse you can never do anything right for? So it's not about the past per se. It's about the continuation and the replication of the past in the present. That's what needs to be recognized and challenged. So how are you identifying with this suppression of your soul?
Yeah, I've heard that that identification is, there are many, and they're like tendrils going throughout my soul. That's pretty dark, but it's raining outside here in LA, so what the heck. I know you talk a lot about processing it. I don't know if that's in my cards, but maybe I could just remember whenever something goes south, I can say, you know, is this their soul murder working, and why am I letting it happen?
Yeah. And maybe the way that you feel connected to them is by perpetuating their treatment of you, except then you never really truly come to life.
True. If I had the wherewithal, I would work intensely on that in processing, and barring any lottery, I got a note to self, buy a ticket. I don't see that. So it's just trying to remember that, keep a rubber band and snap it whenever. But it's all encompassing. It just seems to be down to my double helix, which is kind of melodramatic, but it feels that way. It's felt that way for a very long time. But I guess maybe talking about it and just belaboring it is not the answer either, you know, which I'm doing, but that awareness can help, but, you know, yeah, kind of stuck.
Well, and this is a hard question to answer or even think about, but how is it serving you to stay in this place? I know that I almost hate to ask that because it sounds so confrontational, and of course it's not. It consciously, it's not serving you at all. It's making you miserable. But is there some way that it is serving you? That it's what is it doing for you? Is it safe? Is this you know, the devil you know better than the angel you don't?
Yeah, I mean, it's a good question. And yeah, I get to be a victim. I get to be a victim in this dysfunctional family. I don't have to grow up. I don't have to work to be successful. I don't have to work to have a relationship. I don't have to have anything of material value to lose. Played the piano on Let It Be. He had a song, Nothing from Nothing Leaves Nothing. And you got to have something for something to lose. I, you know, those are all toxic, quote, good excuses. But, you know, it's a lot of hogwash when I stop to think about it. But that core, those core quote advantages are they're the foundation. So I, you know, it's a tough question, but it's an easy question to answer. That's just my truth pulling the covers.
Which is, as miserable as it is, can also feel safe.
Yeah. Yep. Maybe if just kind of winging it, maybe just leaving my living situation and just bailing. That's not safe. Maybe that's my safe, my risky salvation. Or it could just be a lot worse, and I don't know. But what I'm doing is safe. Living with one of the perpetrators is safe. But sure as hell isn't the answer. So I'm just kind of winging it.
Well, you're living with your mom, right? You've talked about that. You're living with your mom, and that, so even though you are a grown-up, when you live with your mom as a grown-up, you can get regressed and constantly be regressed. I remember once I had some boyfriend, and oh my God, it was Mark, the guy from New York. It was him. We went to see his parents, and he became like this pouty 14-year-old. I was like, who are you? You know? So when he was in his parents' home, he became a younger, regressed sort of, whereas he was a very successful guy and, you know, lived his life very, very well on his own. But when he stepped into his parents' home, he became a 14-year-old. And so sometimes when we live or visit or stay with our parents, we regress and get stuck.
Go ahead, sorry. I think you've mentioned before, what I'm doing is treating her unconsciously the way she treated me, in terms of being flat and standoffish and, you know, and just not... not being there for her, but I've taken that, unlike Mark, I've taken that everywhere. And, I wish I could be, quote-unquote, successful, whatever that means, elsewhere, and be indifferent and, you know, pouty around my mom. But it's gone everywhere for half century.
He was successful, but he was kind of boring. So, see, success isn't everything. I know you've talked about finances before. So if you're feeling stuck, there is a reason, there is something keeping you there. There's something you don't want to give up on. There's something you don't want to, something you don't want to admit defeat. And sometimes we have to admit defeat. This is never going to change. This person is never going to change. The only thing that can change is me.
Yeah.
And it's hard to admit defeat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's, I understand that. Okay. Well, it's all food for thought, as you say. I'll go with that and see where that leads me, and continue with a therapist trying to get a new one. The other one had to leave. Mm. And go from there, and I have... dropping names, I have to interview or get to interview the CEO of the City of Hope in about a half an hour, so I better get ready.
Okay, thanks for making time to call in, and I also say be curious, not critical, so keep that in mind while you're giving yourself food for thought.
Exactly. You'll probably hear my voice in a week, and thank you much.
You're very welcome. Talk to you then. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye.
You know, it's hard to feel. It's hard when you know one thing, and you can't do what you know. If that makes sense, and often the same thing with body image, right? I mean, we know, hey, we're more than our bodies. We know everything that I'm talking about. You probably on some level know. It's about integrating it and believing it and allowing yourself to have a positive view of yourself. Sometimes people have negative body images because they need to think badly of themselves. They consciously want to think well of themselves, but they unconsciously don't feel like they deserve to feel good. And so not feeling good about your body is an excellent way to never feel, quote unquote, too good. So if you struggle to feel good about yourself and you struggle with self-esteem, then you want to look at what are the forces within you that make you feel like you don't get to have a feeling of well-being. What about the part of you that feels like, as I said before, like you don't deserve it? And by the way, self-esteem, what is self-esteem? Healthy self-esteem is a realistic appreciation or appreciative opinion about yourself. Dr. Glenn Schiraldi, he wrote a book called The Self-Esteem Workbook. And he says, unconditional human worth assumes that each of us is born with all the capacities needed to live fruitfully, although everyone has a different mix of skills, which are at different levels of development. And he says that a sense of self-worth is independent of all the external stuff we focus on. We think that the way we look and how much money we have and how much education we have and all of that stuff, that's going to give us self-worth. But it's not. If you have an idea that there's something wrong with you or not good enough, you're going to kind of unknowingly filter your experience to fit that story. So as much as you want to change your perception of yourself, you will keep finding evidence to validate the negative narrative. That's something to challenge. You want to look at, well, why is it that I feel like there's something wrong with me? And if it were not my weight or the way I look, what would it be? I cannot tell you how many people have lost weight, and if they don't deal with the self-esteem issue, it just transfers to something else. You know, I had a patient who lost, like, I don't know, like 100 pounds, and he came in one day, and instead of saying, oh my God, you know, I'm not as good as other people because I weigh so much more, and I've got to buy my clothes online, and I don't have the six-pack, and I'm not like the dudes in the gym, and that's what's wrong with me. So he loses 100 pounds, and now then he comes in and he's like, you know, here's what's wrong with me. I'm not smart enough. And he starts comparing his IQ to everybody else. Or another woman lost a lot of weight, and suddenly it was, she focused on another part of her body that wasn't good enough. So if you don't deal with the underlying sense of self-esteem and self-worth, changing your weight and appearance is not going to help. Another person lost weight, and she started worrying about how old she looked, right? I mean, you get the idea. If you don't feel good about yourself, you will find a way to feel bad about yourself. So you want to question this idea that there's something wrong with you, that you've got to be different to be likable and lovable, and you got to learn to like and accept yourself. And I like self-acceptance even better than self-love, although self-love is a good thing, because acceptance encompasses the things that you love about yourself and the things you don't love about yourself. Just as I'm sure if you look at your friends or your spouse or, you know, your family, there are things you love about them and there are things you don't love about them. But what you focus on is what you like, not what you don't like. Or overall, you can accept them despite their flaws. And so that is a way to be with yourself, too. So I hope that this show provided you some inspiration and as well as information. And I thank you for joining me here today on the Dr. Nina Show here on LA Talk Radio. I am here every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Pacific. Listen live or listen later on iTunes. And if you like the show and you want more tips and tools, check out my website, winthedietwar.com, where I have lots of free giveaways to help you make peace with food and feel better. See you next week.
You're listening to The Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle-Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.